I'm self-taught. I didn't get a graduate degree from a school. I am an amalgamator. The movement Maestro. And my meditation was my medication, basically. And so I definitely created conditions of joint laxity all over my body. It's your seam system. It's the soft tissue scaffolding that interconnects from cell to skin. These are soft tools for soft tissue. There's so many emotions that run through you when you realize that you are gonna be cut open and essentially lose the wholeness that you thought you were. Turn on your off switch.
God, I got one last thing and I'm gonna let you go. One last thing. Can you tell us whatever you want about the interstitium?
A podcast designed to help you change your mindset and your life.
It is time for something new.
Join host Dr. Shante Cofield, also known as the Movement Maestro, on a journey to see the bigger picture.
Open your eyes.
Find your passion.
And discover how movement unites us all.
Let's get it popping.
This is Maestro on the Mic. I'm the Maestro, and you're about to get maestrified.
3, 2, 1.
Hey guys, Maestro here, coming at you live with another episode of Maestro on the Mic. Today I have with me the Jill Miller. If you don't know her, I don't know how you don't know her, but if you don't know her, you're going to hear from her. I'm super pumped to have her on the episode. She is the founder of Tune Up Fitness Worldwide. You guys may know her more from the role model, Yoga Tune Up. Things like that. I'm going to let her drop a little more knowledge about that. She's incredibly, incredibly knowledgeable when it comes to fascia. She has a skill, I would say, an uncanny ability to take things that are kind of nebulous, kind of out there, kind of over our heads, and make them digestible and bring them to everyone. She's a mom. If you don't follow her on social media, you need to, because her kids are absolutely just, they're just so cute. And we get to watch movement happen, and she teases things out. It's just so much. I want to say all the things, but I'm not going to. Without further ado, welcome to the show, Jill Miller.
Shante, also known as, and I've been wanting to say this out loud, like to everybody for so long, the movement Maestro.
Oh, exactly.
Maestro is how you pronounce maestro. It drives me crazy, but so, that's okay. We live in the U.S., so
exactly.
Not everybody is going to be able to trill their R's, but it's maestro.
Exactly.
And like a wonderful, you know, opera you are, because you are all the things also. Anyway, hi.
Hello, Jill. You are so right. I have very much Americanized it and made it maestro, because people can't roll their R's, and so it comes out maestro, and that just sounds way worse. So I'm like, just say maestro, unless you can say it like Jill does, and then then you can say it that way. Thank you so much for making the time, Jill. We actually, you guys listening, we booked this a while ago, because like, I think we tried in like, I don't know, May, June, July. And it was just like, Jill was like, I can do it in October. And I was like, then I will take October, because we need to talk and the world needs to hear your voice. So thank you for making the time, Jill.
Truly. Well, thank you. I mean, I try, you know, I do podcasts and I love doing these, because to me, they're like awesome conversations with the people I want to hang out with.
Yeah.
But I also am aware that you know, you don't want to have too many conversations there.
It's true.
Enough.
It's true. You know, you are spot on. You got to learn to say no to some stuff. So I'm glad you said yes to this one. Thank you.
Well, I'm psyched.
So, Miss Jill.
Yes.
Can you please tell the people, people that listen, they know I don't like to do the whole big background. I gave somewhat of a background, but can you share with the folks whatever speaks to you? What do you want to share about your background? So they can, the folks that don't know you.
Yeah, well, I guess what I could fill in is maybe things that you didn't say, because yes, I'm the author of The Role Model. I've created Yoga Tune-Up. I create lots of curriculum and programming for different global gym chains and small boutique-y things and clinic-y things and athletic teams. But really what I'm about is helping people to embody their body. And I'm a process-based teacher. I really like I'm not a results-oriented person, and that is a little bit heretical in the giant maze of the global fitness industry, which is mm-hmm. really about results. And I'm not about that. And I teach people to really accept where they are in the process of their, you know, their biological experience and, yeah. and all that that brings. And the way that we as practitioners or as embodiment, as humans, can influence our own adaptation response through stimulating ourselves in different ways. I happen to have a very strong toehold or foothold in the recovery space. And that's really because I teach primarily movements and practices that will upregulate the downregulation function of the body or the downregulation factor in the autonomic nervous system. And that is through breath work, self-massage, inquiry, body awareness, and movements that are more restorational based than are on, let's say, muscle building or caloric expenditure or high intensity.
Jill, you just said something. So I'm over here like, whoa, upregulating the downregulating factor.
Yes.
That's so, that's going to be the title of this episode. That is so good.
Well, I say it many different ways in many different days, but the simplest way I say it is turn on your off switch.
Yes. That is so good. And I mean, I think that Jill has always been, for you guys listening, Jill's always been ahead of the curve, and everyone's catching up right now and realizing the importance of recovery and realizing the importance of what comes after and when you're not in the gym and all the rest of the time when your body's actually trying to grow and when you're actually going to make your gains is when you're able to do this. If you're go, go, go all the time, pedal to the metal, you're going to, that engine's going to blow up. And so I think the world is finally catching up to that. So we're lucky to have you at the forefront of that. What got you into that? Why?
Well, because I'm a really stressed out person. I think bottom line is I grew up in a lot. No, it's true. I mean, I grew up in a lot of chaos, lots of divorces, mm-hmm. lots of losses, bankruptcies, just mm-hmm. really chaotic childhood. And I think that my way of coping was to sedate myself through relaxation practices like yoga, massage, meditation, breath work. And as I've aged and as I've grown, I'm really glad that I created this data bank of these practices, because no matter yeah. what I do, no matter what endeavor I do, whether it's getting my hip replaced, which I did recently, or whether it's flying internationally back and forth in 5 days like I yes. do frequently, I can really count on these practices to help restore my baseline of resiliency. And that's what I teach.
It's you. Jill, I'm going to sneak in here because you brought it up. I was like, oh, I'll bring it up later in the show. That hip replacement, that's huge. Like, that is huge, and huge for you. I know we talked about it a little bit beforehand. Huge for you as, you know, your brand, if you will, what people may view it as and view you as without actually knowing you. Mm-hmm. It was a big deal to go and undergo that. You want to chat about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, first of all, I think that when I started teaching yoga tune-up 12 years ago, 13 years ago, when I sort of coined the term yoga tune-up, it was heretical for me to say yoga something else, you know, yoga plus plus. Like, oh, people are like, oh, are you better than yoga because you're tuning up yoga? So I started teaching the way I was teaching because I had a deep sense that I had overstretched my body from limb to limb in decades of yoga practices and stretch-based practices like dance that were on the, I would say, the softer side of the strength curve. I was mm-hmm. not developing a lot of robust strength in my joints, or had a lot of muscle mass. And the repetition of those practices over time, and the disciplined way that I practice them, which is to say that I was obsessive in my own practices because they soothed me, because yeah. this was my way of caretaking, so that I wasn't on medication. Like, this was my medication. My meditation was my medication, basically. And so I definitely created conditions of joint laxity all over my body. And when I started to have some, I started to have some very strange pain in my left SI joint about 12 years ago. And I went into a doctor and they're like, nothing's wrong with you. There's just nothing wrong. And I had knee pain at the same time as well. And I just stopped practicing the way I was practicing. I just stopped it cold turkey and started adding more, I would call it mobility exercises, but not in the way so that I could get more flexible, but mobility so that I was certain that my joints were actually able to carry their own weight. I mean, nowadays you see a lot of practices, especially that, you know, folks like Andrea Spina has spawned that are solely around, you know, controlled articulations. And my teacher was teaching this type of work. My teacher's name is Glenn Black. I met him when I was 19. Was teaching this type of work. So I started to just do the tune-up part of the work and slowly and surely started leaving off the traditional yoga asana, because I found that the asana, especially holding those isometric holds for long periods of time at end range, were probably the things that were doing me in. So I was reverse engineering asana. And that is really how I came up with the term yoga tune-up, was I would do tune-ups that would really reverse engineer poses. But the damage to my cartilage and to my labrum probably had been done back in, you know, the teens and the 20s when I was, you know, sort of overdoing those long stretches. And then I think the last dozen years has really been about my own intuitive pain management. I didn't know that I had a diseased hip. I mean, I'm looking at my hip right now, Shanti, because I have it on my desk in a in a little jar of formaldehyde. And you can see the jaggedness and the osteophytes. And, you know, this wasn't something that happened in the last 3 years. This is old home week in the femur. And it's just sort of amazing that the way I changed my practice, I think, ultimately preserved this very diseased hip and preserved me from realizing that I had this deformation. So did I answer your question?
You did answer the question. You gave people some background on the hip replacement. And I think you gave them a little bonus there, just talking about that there are things you can do to not prevent, but to stave off some of this stuff once things occur. I don't think you can prevent injury. I think we can mitigate stuff after it shows up, which, you know, a huge part of that is being intuitive, like you said, and listening to your body. If you have to change things, you have to change things. So often we have, you know, people, we just, and that's part of our society, it's how we are, kind of just push through with things, no pain, no gain. And that's, you know, we're learning that's probably not the best method. What did it mean for you, Jill, when you discovered you had to, you know, they told you like you have to have the hip placement at this point? What did that mean for you in terms of sharing that with your audience?
When, you know, I thought I had a torn labrum, just everything was indicating to me that I had a torn labrum. And of course I had no labrum left. So I was correct. I did have a torn labrum. And also I had, you know, I had bone bruises, I had bone spurs, and I had a slight cam deformation. So by the way, that slight cam deformation is that the femoral head was not perfectly spherical. And so that is likely to have been a birth defect. You know, possibly was that I started walking weird at age, you know, 14 months or 15 months after I stepped on a sewing needle in my mom's room. Who knows what created that? But what did I do when I found out about the diagnosis? Well, first of all, there's so many emotions that run through you when you realize that you are going to be cut open and essentially lose the wholeness that you thought you were. And somebody who knows about fascia and scars and repair and recovery, you know, I knew that this would all be able to heal on a structural level. And I also know that wherever there's a cut, there's always going to be some inherent weakness going forward, that things will never be... You know, things will never have entirely the same tensile resiliency that they have prior to incision and organic suturing, you know, the scar formation. So that's always scary, like realizing, oh, you're going to lose some of your wholeness, but that the prosthesis is likely going to give you things that, of course, your disease tip can never give you, because the mm-hmm. disease tip is actually only trying to play catch up the whole time. And its way of playing catch up is a very jigsaw and a harmful healing process at this point, right? So the bone spurs are the bone trying to prevent any more bone loss, right? It's trying to reinforce itself. So all this to say that I had lots of feelings and lots of stories about what was going to happen, what contributed to it. And then there's this identity that I have in the mm-hmm. greater fitness space as being this person who is a problem solver and is a prehabilitation specialist. And, you know, how could that person have this, have not known that I had a disease, that I was living with degenerative osteoarthritic hip? And I had to ask myself that question, like, how did I miss this? Like, what level of denial was I in around my own movement patterns or around my pain or my discomfort? And how was I going to, or was I going to own up to it? Like, what would happen if I were to share this? Like, would the people who trusted me feel that I had failed them in my programming because the programming had failed me? But the story is that the work that I've been working on for the last 12 years isn't what failed me.
Exactly.
It preserved me. And it was this, I was led to studies of therapeutic movement and cadaver studies and seminar after seminar with masters from so many different disciplines in order to prepare myself for this moment. You know, in order to prepare myself for my own recovery, I feel like I've just been amassing all these best practices for all my life, not just the last dozen years. It's just that the overstretching kind of behavior, there just is no place for that. I don't think, unless you're an artist and it needs to happen because that is your, that's your paycheck.
Yeah.
And, you know, and for a while, in a sense, when I was that type of yoga person, it sort of was my paycheck to have both legs behind my head. But in terms of a functional life and, you know, having children and not losing your SI joint in the process, probably not so functional, right? Yeah. So it just depends on where you feel your virtue in the world is. And so I'm glad I made a turnaround when I did. So I, excuse me. So I decided that I needed, first of all, I was going to give myself as much time as I needed to process this impending loss and to line up my ducks, because I had a photo shoot for, God, this magazine. And then I had to do another photo shoot for my book that I'm working on. I had to get all this. I had an international trip. I was teaching in Munich. I had to get all this stuff in between the actual diagnosis and my, you know, Dr. Snippy walking into to the office the first time he met me saying, "So when do you want to schedule?" Those were his first words to me. Oh. I was like, yeah, he was not going to like mince words. It was like, I'm not going to, there's no further conservative measure. No, like, we're not even going to start with a conservative measure.
It's time.
You're done.
it is time.
But by the time I had got to his office, I already realized that was going to be the only option, you know, between the MRI reading and then when I met with him, I knew that was going to be my option. So anyway, I gave myself time to process it, Shante. I talked to a lot of people. I think I might have called you even.
Yeah, you remember? We spoke.
Like in a fog,
absolutely.
Like in a sort of dizzy fog.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was very, I felt really reassured by my tribe of people that I talked to before I sort of came out that, you know, hip surgery is definitely one of the easiest mega surgeries, you know, or joint replacements to heal from. And, Yeah. And then I wanted to make sure that I was honest about it with my community, especially the teachers, because I wanted them to have faith that what they were doing was right and what they were doing was okay and it was safe, and that I was reckoning with my own past and my own addiction, mm-hmm. and that this was part of my disease, wasn't just a disease tip. This is the legacy of addiction, yes. that that's a part of this whole story.
Jael, man, you put, you know, everyone talks about the biopsychosocial model. You just talked about all three points and did it so eloquently. Like, you can't, we get then this pain science rabbit hole and people are just really leaning on the psychosocial component of things. Well, guess what? The bio part is still there. And if that hip is not doing what it's supposed to do, it's not shaped the way it's supposed to be shaped, like, at some point, yeah, you may have to go and have that surgery. Like, you can't just, you know, talk to this person and talk them out of it. It's, there's so much complexity to a pain, right? And then you bring in that psychosocial component of, okay, I have a community, I have a past, I've done this. I need to make sure that people know that what I've been teaching, it is very relevant. It actually kept you from having to have that hip replacement for a long time while you had all the other stuff going on. And, you know, I remember that phone call absolutely very, very vividly and being like, wow, that, you know, big surgery, the only easy surgery is one that's not yours. It's like, yeah, it's no problem, so easy, because like, I'm not the one getting it. So, you know, you hit that on the nail on the head there, where it's like you losing part of your wholeness there. And what does it mean for coming back and getting back into things? Yes, you know, from the physical therapy side, we see these things, they do great. But it's also at the same time, it's because it's not my surgery.
Yeah,
like that, you really hit the nail on the head there with so much. And it's been fascinating and awesome to watch your recovery and tying all the stuff that you know and bringing all the stuff that you know, and also bringing in your kids to it and just how they move. I love that you do that. Just looking at movement and looking at what you can do now and looking at a pistol squat and looking at the scar. I mean, like from the very beginning, you had us looking at the scar and choosing this approach or incision, you know. Mm-hmm. It's been great. So one, thank you for sharing all that with us. It's for those of you guys out there, her handle is, it's Yoga Tuneup, right? There's nothing else on there, right, Jael?
Right. So my personal handle on Instagram is Yoga Tuneup. And if you really are into listening to me talk about the hip, I have a specific hashtag that has every post that I did that's specific to the hip surgery and replacement is the role remodel, and it's ROLL hashtag the role remodel.
So
yeah, right.
It's so way to rebrand
it. But then
that's
my
way to do it.
We also have my company is Tuneup Fitness, and so we also have a brand page at Tuneup Fitness, and they're the ones that are gonna have contests and stuff. I don't do contests on my own personal page. So if you want to like get in on free shit, go to the sign up
go.
For the Tuneup Fitness brand page on Instagram, and yeah, exactly.
That's all the good stuff. I'll link that stuff for you guys in the show notes, but highly recommend you follow. I'm a big fan of stories too. I think that they're great. It gives you a little insight into people's lives. And Jael has two awesome kids, and we get to see them and get to watch them move, and she explains stuff. And actually, Jael, one of my most favorite things was watching you was when Asher fell. And this sounds bad.
Oh,
one of my favorite things was when Asher fell and he hurt his mouth, and just that process, and then you not being able to breastfeed, and him not latching, and just that whole, you bring in science to it. It was really, it was pretty dope story. So thank you for sharing that.
You're gonna totally traumatize me right now, but like, I'll go there, because it was, first of all, I'll tell you what, this all goes back to the surgery. One of the reasons why I chose the surgery wasn't just because my surgeon is like so dope. He's like so amazing. And he innovated this surgery himself. It's an innovation on the path procedure. It's called the direct superior approach. It's an outpatient procedure for
it's crazy.
For total hip. I was in
it's
and
crazy.
Out 6 hours
it's of, crazy.
Of a surgical center, which is affiliated with, you know, Cedar. So should anything go wrong, but I checked in at 6:30 AM and I walked out on my walker at 12:30. And his recovery is basically you walk 5 times a day, you walk until you're in pain, and then you just go back and lay down. So by month 2 or 2.5 months or 10 weeks, he was like, okay, push it. He was like, do everything. Yeah. He was just
it's
an
incredible.
Amazing, but what I found out when I went in for my my first x-ray is that most people don't opt for the go home. Most people stay the night because I don't know why they do. The reason I wanted to go home is I wanted to nurse my son. Yeah. And one of the reasons why I delayed getting imaging for as long as I did, because I had a recurring pain in my TFL, my tensor fascia lata. Mm-hmm. And I knew that a recurring pain, you know, a pain that was on off for, you know, 6 years, that's called chronic pain. But I could always get rid of the pain in my TFL through, you know, corrective movement, but it would always come back. Now, it's always coming back because there's this underlying biological condition, going back to the biopsychosocial model. So this is all about, this is about Asher's fall that you were talking about. So just so that your audience knows, like, I knew that Asher was going to be my last child. And if you are a breastfeeding type of lady like I am, like I'd be breastfeeding him until he was 9. Like, I am that person, you guys, just so you know. Like, I am that person. I won't be that person. I can't be that person because at 16 months, which is just a couple of months after I came out of the hip replacement, Asher fell in the shower. He had just started walking, and sometimes we would do a family shower, and he fell and he hit his mandible, his jaw on the tile, and his tongue was out and his teeth severed. His frenulum, the base of his tongue, was severed away from the base of his mouth. And when we walked into the ER, we were all covered with blood, and the admitting staff looked at us. Their eyes were the size of lobster pots, and they just rushed us into the back because they didn't know if this was an abuse thing, or it looked like we had been in a bomb. And they had to do 5 stitches to sew his tongue back in, which isn't a lot, but it sure felt like a lot.
Yeah.
For a little baby mouth.
For a little dude, yeah. He's a little tiny kid.
So small. He's in the 3rd percentile. I have a little miniature.
He's so tiny. He's
miniature child. I'm very small too. If your people don't know, I'm a very small human. So is my husband. We're on the smaller scale. We don't breed Great Danes over here. But we do love pit bulls. So as the doctor, the ER doctor, I'm explaining to her, or expressing to her that I'm, you know, want to be able to nurse him again. And she just stops. She turns and she looks at me and she says, "I have 5 children. I breastfed all of them. I will return a son who can nurse. I promise." Wow. And so I felt really reassured. I'm getting the chills right now thinking about it. Yeah,
the same thing just when you said that. Wow.
But he never did. He never latched again. And it was one of those things where that entire biochemistry was just unplugged, violently off of my, off my nervous system and off my biochemistry. And that I didn't have that with Lila, because she slowly weaned herself at 16 months. She was like, pushed me away on Independence Day. I was like, okay, on July 4th. She's like, I don't want that. And
independence.
But literally it was 16 months to the day that she pushed me away, and then 16 months to the day he had his fall. So both kids, I know it's kind of poetic and beautiful in a way. And so he never latched again. And I then had what's, I guess, called post-lactation depression. I mean, I felt like I was going insane, having all the chemistry, not have an outlet anymore. Yeah. And that wasn't the first time I've had an experience like that. So it was just a horrible thing. I had had a loss at 20 weeks in my very first pregnancy. Horrible, horrible loss. Yeah. And so the sort of reversal of fortune in the female body, when hormones have no way to materialize what their destiny is. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's a freaking horrible process.
Just so you guys, tying it in a little bit, Jill does this with everything in terms of bringing the science to stuff. Like, there's tremendous value in just hearing someone's story and listening to them and shared experiences if you have that. But one of the things for me, I'm not a mom, I don't have any kids, anything like that. It was incredible to watch you go through that and for you to teach us too as it's happening and explaining all of these things. Yes, there's the feelings that are going on, but then also because you're Jill and you go and do research and you've been doing research and you have a brain like that to share the stuff, the science behind it of like, yeah, this is a chemical process that's going on here and this thing has just been shut off, taken away, and there's no place, you know, there's no outlet now and what that means and how that manifests and just looking at the person as a whole, it was really remarkable. So I am sure it sounds terrible, but thank you for sharing that.
I need the right brain, left brain thing. Otherwise, I'll go completely crazy into story. So I personally need to have I need to have like the backup substantiated. It makes me feel that my suffering is a valid expression. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Oh,
totally, totally. And I think people out there can appreciate that. They should appreciate that. I mean, I'm all about not letting the pendulum swing too far. Like, I think with everything, you just see people are way on this side and way on that side. And, you know, my guy Paul Coker said it, history will show you that the middle of the road is never really a bad place to be. And I love that you bring both sides to it. It's like, hey, yeah, I'm experiencing this. I'm very aware and in tune with my body. And here's what I'm going through. But here's also the why behind it, for what we know.
Let me share with your readers what I think one of the turning points for me was, and this has nothing necessarily to do with the baby, but when I was in my 20s, kids, because I'm 46 now, so I can say stuff like this. When I was in my 20s, I did not do well in relationships. I had a series of failed relationships from, you know, high school to college, and I got a book called A General Theory of Love. I don't know if you've ever read this book.
No, I've never even heard of it.
So it basically just goes through the scientific, the physiology of love. And there's these scientists up in Stanford, I'm blanking on their names, but they had done so much research on the actual physiology of love and what are the affects and the sort of physical manifestations of the biochemistry that's involved with different stages of love. And so after I read that book, first of all, you know, it validated so many of my experiences. And then I also knew what to look for in my own body when I was near people who were triggering me in a positive way or triggering me in a way that I was going to like go down my old path. So anyway, that's how analytical I am about my physiology. Yeah. And now I have this amazing like husband of 10 years. Yeah. We just had our 10th anniversary and we have two kids and go get that book.
It worked out. Yeah. Wow. A General Theory of Love.
Yeah.
That's what it's called. All right. I'll link that for you guys in the show notes. A General. That is fascinating, Jill. Let's keep on that track of science, that part of your brain. Fascia. That's you. That's what people associate you with, or they should. I don't know. Fascia and diaphragm, they should really, you know, associate
yeah,
you with.
Those are two good ones.
That's when I hear Jill, I'm like, yes.
How about diaphragmatic fascia? Like that.
I mean, let's go ahead. If you were to talk to someone who had never heard of fascia before, yeah, how would you present this to them? How would you start explaining things to them?
It's your seam system.
Your seam system. Go on. Yeah. I'm giving you the mic.
So thank you for my maestro. Thank you. Your seam system, it's the soft tissue scaffolding that interconnects from cell to skin, inside and out, top to bottom. It gives your body its form and its shape. It is organized in different layers. It has different textures. We can get into more specifics than that, maestro, but the simply put is it's your body's seam system.
And if someone was to ask, is it alive?
Everything inside of you is alive, including your fascia.
I love it. I'm just trying to, you know, share some of your knowledge with the people. What got you so into it, Jill?
Probably my first teacher, Glenn Black. Well, let me scroll back further. My dad's a medical doctor. He's an infectious disease specialist and an epidemiologist. Yeah. And so I grew up around his medical textbooks, and I was not afraid of those textbooks. And they just had gore and disease and, you know, bubbly skin and infection and funguses and, you know, enlarged images of bacteria and prion and spores and nuclei. I just remember loving reading through, or let's say paging through, his medical textbooks and his journals. That was always of interest. And I was, my parents are divorced, but a lot of times when I'd be visiting my dad, we'd end up going to medical conferences. Not that I would go to the actual conferences. I got to go to like the buffet, and my stepmom and I would go, you know, do activities in the town or whatever. But I think growing up and listening to him do Call Out, where he would, you know, talk to the, you know, do consults with other doctors, help me feel really comfortable around the language of science, and especially the language of disease and anatomy and biology, microbiology. So the fascia thing came in really specifically when I was learning, maybe this is kind of a smush up. One, I started studying shiatsu massage when I was 18 in Chicago, where I was going to school at Northwestern. And I feel like when we were studying the meridians in shiatsu, because the in the Chinese medical model, or actually this was a Japanese medical model, the shiatsu, is a meridian theory. And I'm pretty sure that fascia was referenced within that training, or those trainings. I was with them for about 2 years. But in the meantime, I would go for my summers, I would go and work, do work study at this place in upstate New York called the Omega Institute for Holistic Studies. And it was there when I was living in a tent and being a hippie with hair in my armpits and the whole bit, like full on.
So good, Jill. It's so good.
I'm 46, remember? I met my teacher. I met my teacher, Glenn Black. And in the yoga space, the teacher is a really big deal. Yeah. It's like the person that teaches you all the things. But Glenn wasn't just my teacher. He was my mentor. And he's also not like an organized teacher in that he has a brand like I do, right? Like I actually have a brand, and we have logos and this and that. Glenn was just a teacher. He was, and I'd be happy if I called him a rogue, and a bit of a recluse type of person. And he did body work, and he did a type of body work that he learned from his mentor, Shmuel Tots, who's a physical therapist in New York City, who is from Russia. So he does orthopedic medical massage, Russian style. So I learned this from my teacher, from Glenn, in the context of our classes, because he would teach classes to the staff at Omega. Oh. And I would show up every day that he taught, which I think was like, you know, Monday through Friday, 7 to 8 a.m. or whatever time it was. And he just took me under his wing. I started assisting him at some of his events, because he would also teach events at this retreat center, or also events off campus, and learned the hands-on techniques. I'm not sure all of his other influences, but I know he talked about fascia all the time. And this was in 1990, 1991, 92, when I started learning from him. And then fast forward the real like buckets of fascia, like literal buckets of fascia, was when I got to start doing cadaver labs with Gil Headley and diving into his work. So he's a wonderful.
How did you set that up?
How'd I hook that up?
With Gil. Yeah.
With Gil? Oh, I just, I guess I just asked him a lot of questions and became his friend. He's in my book. I've got anatomy illustrations from him in my book. He's just a really warm, dynamic human who also, you know, who loves students. Like Glenn, my teacher, loves students. He loves people who want to learn. And I think Gil is very much, he's such a natural teacher. And really loves and cherishes that relationship, I think, with earnest students. So and you know, being respectful of somebody's model is a really great way to, you know, to earn friendship. Like I love his model. I think his model is brilliant.
Yes.
He's got the onion tree model of anatomy.
Yes.
Which is, it's basically a layered concept of anatomy that we are We are a layered being, and each layer is interconnected to the next layer. And all these layers are interpenetrated by the vasculature tree and the nervous system tree. So that's his model, is called the onion tree model. So he's kind of an anarchist, actually, quite an anarchist in the way that he's developed his cadaver, sort of cadaver art, I suppose.
This is style. Gil you're talking about.
Yeah, talking about Gil.
Really, as an anarchist, it's so interesting. I think it depends on who we're exposed to. I mean, I love Gil's stuff, and maybe I'm just not exposed to enough of other stuff, but I'm like, yeah, this makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Done. Like, it's so interesting. Go on. Sorry to interrupt. Wow.
No, I think I'm kind of, unless you have a follow-up question about that, I think that's...
You asked. I mean, that actually segues really nice. I have like so many things that I want to ask you. It segues nicely. You guys out there listening, I wanted her to at least tease you a little bit with her knowledge of fascia and just the body in general. But Jill, and you actually got into it a little bit. Your training, your background, when people ask, what are you? What do you do? What do you say to them?
Sometimes I really don't like to answer the question. I am self-taught.
I love it.
I'm self-taught. I didn't get a graduate degree from a school. I am an amalgamator and I'm a practitioner, number one, meaning I have been very disciplined about self-study my whole life. And thanks, Mom, for that, because she was a... She was kind of a beast when it came to academics. If I got a B, I got grounded. So I developed study habits, very intense study habits early on to be able to learn. And the unfortunate fact about that also was that I really learned to do self-study. I didn't team up with others to learn. It was a very competitive atmosphere in my home with my sister, and we didn't study together. We studied separately and both did extremely well in school. But that's a whole other story. So I am technically what's called a CIAYT. That's a certified yoga therapist through an organization called the International Association of Yoga Therapists. And this is basically the highest, you know, our credential that you can get in the yoga space at this time and place, or at this time in the world. And I'm also a experienced registered yoga teacher with Yoga Alliance. So I'm squarely in the yoga space. I haven't gone out and gotten a personal training cert or any of those other certs, but you'll certainly see me at different continuing education
everywhere.
Courses, won't you, Shantae?
You'll see Jill everywhere. And that was the answer that I was hoping for. And you guys out there listening, because a lot of my audience, that's what I'm learning, the people that write into me at least, a lot of PTs out there, or PTs or chiros, or people kind of looking to transition into that space, and they're so concerned with letters, and more concerned with letters than knowledge. And I'm not saying for you guys out there, like, letters don't matter. I'm not saying you shouldn't go get them, but listen to what this woman is saying, and the fact that take knowledge from everywhere. Ask, which is like, I have a big word on my paper, ask, and I have it circled, because you ask Gil, you know, can, you know, and can, how did you, you know, you formed that relationship there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I pinch myself when I think, like, I've done, you know, I've created programs and products with Kelly Starrett.
Yeah.
I've got a program coming up in February with Katie Bowman. I'm co-teaching a program with Tom Myers next summer at his institute for the second time. I'll be invited back. And I'm just like, how did this happen? I'm getting asked to write in academic texts, but it's because I am relentless in studying. And I, you know, the little sort of chip on my shoulder from my own childhood is, oh, I don't have a doctorate. Mm-hmm. Like, shit, I didn't get the doctorate. You know, my sibling's a doctorate, and, you know, like, so it's just one of those, like, strange insecurities that I have, but I also know that the number of clinicians who come to my trainings tells me that it's okay that I'm actually a self-taught thingamajig, and that I'm going to continue to amalgamate and, you know, kill off old practices that need to die, and, you know, build new practices that need to be born, and share practices that I gain from other brilliant
from all over. I love
it.
I mean,
and yeah.
we're seeing that trend. And so I'm hoping that, you know, the young therapists are out there, even the old therapists are out there, you're seeing that if you want to really truly help people, get out of the one traditional way that you learn how to do something. Go and learn from other people, learn from other styles, learn everything you can and mix it together and create your style and figure out what works best in this and why, and look at why is that working? Why is that working? Not simply did that work. I get on my soapbox a little bit because people are always like, where are the studies? Did it work? Okay. And then let's start going down the rabbit hole of how did it work? Not just did it work for these 17 people with the exact same background and demographic, all these white men that took this test and were in part of this study. Like, all right, fine. There's some validity there, but go and expose yourself to as much as possible. Jill is where she's at today because she's really fucking good at what she does. She never stops learning. She never starts pushing. She asks.
I share practices, and the practices that I share work for other people. So The whole thing about the role model is that really you are empowered to do your own self-care.
Yes, I love that.
And it's a practice of sharing best practices and then innovating, expanding, and learning some principles that will help you to make best decisions for your own thing. And so I think that's part of what's been so successful about our brand is the honest, our best guess at a lot of why this stuff works or how this works, and then adapting and changing over time as we actually get evidence. So we recently did just get some evidence that totally supported everything we already knew in our bodies. One of our teachers, her name is Dr. Robin Capobianco.
Oh,
yeah, Steve's wife. You know her husband, right? So she just got her PhD in neurophysiology. And so Dr. Capobianco she's now working for a major chronic pain, back pain outfit outside of Texas right now. They just relocated down there. But she did two of her studies for her PhD were on the yoga tuna balls and what they might be doing. Because
love it. It's so good.
We don't have evidence unless you know, we can say, oh, well, here's some studies where they used tennis balls, or here's some studies where they used lacrosse balls or what have you, but we didn't actually have anything where they used our tools. But she got some really interesting results that support doing rolling prior to exercise in order to hit a PR or in order to have max output, which is contradictory to what some people think, that you shouldn't roll out before you exercise because it's going to diminish the force production. In fact, it doesn't. It enhances force production. And then you can, of course, use therapy balls after for a really exaggerated relaxation response to help you sleep better later that night or set you up for a mellow evening with friends or whatever it is that you want to accomplish. But using the therapy balls pre and post are both best practices for different reasons.
And I'm guessing use how they're using them with one, we're doing more upregulatory stuff before.
No.
They're just rolling the same exact way?
Like when she did the study, what they did was they did some calf stretching, right? So it's easy to study the calf. That's one of the easiest places to study the human body. So they did a 30-second static calf stretch followed by 30 seconds of rolling. 30 seconds of rolling, okay? Then 30-second static calf stretch, 30 seconds of rolling, 30-second calf stretch, 30 seconds of rolling. And this wasn't like 30 seconds of rolling and really thinking about the tissues, which is what we'll do when we teach. We're like, now think about these different layers and the fascicles and, really bringing people into their attention on these areas. But that really wasn't the study. They're like, okay, stretch, roll, stretch, roll, stretch, roll. Now, if you just stretch your calf, we know that static stretching, you have a loss of force production, right? It improves range of motion. Static stretching improves range of motion, but you're not going to have a stronger calf right afterwards, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what they found was that when they did the stretch plus roll, that the range of motion was greater than just the static stretch. And surprisingly, the force production was way greater. So it had overcome the force deficit that static stretching did. So they don't know why. So there's still that question. Was it something about stimulating the proprioceptors? Had some type of reverse wonderful impact on motor output. We don't know. They don't know. Maybe she'll do another study someday, or it'll be explained by somebody else someday. But they did it on college-age kids.
There's a start.
College-age kids, of course, because that's who's at college. But then they did a second study with middle-aged adults. Now, that's really important. She got the same results with the middle-aged adults because falling is one of the greatest risks for death in the elderly.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
One of the presets or one of the preconditions that happens around falling is that you loss of foot control. And so the calf is really important for being able to have a foot and an ankle that can move you forward in space and predict its landing on the ground. So this is just a wonderful little feather in our cap, and it got published in the European Journal of Sports Medicine.
Ah, totally. I have to look into that. I mean, we talk about in some of our courses and just kind of using ball, doesn't matter, ball, tool, things in an upregulatory fashion, kind of rolling through them faster. And then if we're looking for mobility gains, lose them afterwards. But it's nice when you have the literature for those people that are asking, like, but show me. So it's nice when you have that. And I think you hit the nail on the head there, where best practices precede best studies. You know, it's what you're doing this stuff, and it's like, this is working, it's what we're seeing. And I love that you're making it specific to the human, to the individual rather, which is what I think one of the things, like you said, that has really promoted furthered its success, because you can't just do one protocol for everyone. So it's like, all right, here's some principles, and then you apply it based on the person in front of you. Mm-hmm. And then from there, after that, you'll start to see the studies coming. Like for my PTs out there, my new grads, you know, you don't treat based on the studies typically are made based on how we've been treating and what's been working, and you're trying to figure out what's going on, but just because there's a lot of red tape and it takes a long time to kind of figure out and get things passed and do trials and such like that. But we do have some cool dynamic or diagnostic ultrasound stuff coming up which can show us in real time what's going on. So that's exciting, Jill.
Oh, I can't wait.
Jill, can you speak on
yeah
I know, dude, I'm so pumped. Can you speak on just a little bit, you started about it, because actually I promote yoga tune-up balls to everyone, you know, when I teach my courses and stuff.
Oh, thank you.
Can you just, it's a great product. At the end of the day, I'm here to talk to people about great products. Can you just kind of talk about the differences between that and like a golf ball, cross ball? People don't know what they are.
Oh, sure. So my products are called the Role Model Balls, and there's four different types of balls within the Role Model Balls universe at this point in time. The smallest ball is called the yoga tune-up ball, and it is slightly smaller than a lacrosse ball. All of the balls, by the way, are made of grippy, pliable rubber, and that's key. These are soft tools for soft tissue. There's a time and a place for hard tools, but for a general population, a soft tool is a little bit more forgiving, and it helps to reduce the unconscious muscle bracing that naturally happens when somebody is probed by a stress transfer medium, by a tool. So all of our balls are designed for human flesh, and so they have spring and give to them, and they're textured so that the grippy texture can actually grab a hold of skin and have a shear effect, can be able to stick to the skin and mobilize the skin and its underlying superficial fascia to create traction from surface to deep. And you really can't get that very well when you have a slick ball like a golf ball or a tennis ball. In addition, because the balls are squishy, they're pliable, they kind of mimic human tissue. They're designed to break down and get springier and springier. When they roll up and around bony prominences, they conform to the bony prominence. If you're rolling a lacrosse ball along your spine, the ball just keeps pushing into the bone. In the case of the Role Model balls, the yoga tuna ball, the therapy ball plus, the alpha ball, the bony prominence actually is surrounded by the rubber so that the ball then can catch a hold of the tissues within a joint juncture. So I can actually massage into the soft tissues and influence the mechanoreceptors in there and minimize the risk of annoying or pinching or bruising a nerve that might be in that area too. And you have to realize when you're using a hard tool on your body, you're also pressing and compressing against vasculature, against very, very fine tubes, also robust tubes within your body. And so you want to have You want to have options in being able to do really detailed work in high value, nerve rich spaces like a joint junction. And exactly. Our balls can maneuver their way into those junctions because of their size and because they can conform to your form rather than just squashing, compressing, and annoying those areas. So the Yoga Tune-Up balls are the smallest, slightly larger than a lacrosse ball, or what's called the Therapy Ball Plus. By the way, the Yoga Tune-Up balls are vertebral friendly. They're really great along the spine. The Plus balls are a little bit bigger. A lot of people like the Plus balls for their feet, or they like them for their hips. Some of our larger mass students find that they're better for their backs or their knees. And then there's the Alpha ball. The Alpha ball is a little bit smaller than a softball. It's also made from that dense, pliable, grippy rubber. And then finally, there's the Gorgeous Ball. The Gorgeous Ball is an air-filled ball, and the Gorgeous Ball has like a skin. It's got a really sticky skin, and that we primarily use that on the trunk for respiratory mechanics, breath mechanics. It's a wonderful tool to help mobilize your ribs. We use it on the anterior neck, do lots of different neck exercises using the Gorgeous Ball. And then people will use the Gorgeous Ball for, you know, different toning exercises also.
Works.
You know, because it's like a Gertie ball, so you can do lots of things with it. It's my favorite ball. And the most famous thing that the Gorgeous Ball is known for, my friend Kelly Starrett nicknamed it the Gut Smash, and which I actually call the Abdominal Massage because...
Yeah. That's nicer.
It's just a little friendlier. I've got my ovaries in there. I don't want to smash them at all. I just want to like love them and support my uterus and my liver and, you know, things like that. So abdominal massage. But if you do hashtag Gut Smash, you'll see lots of people using the Gorgeous Ball. My friend Brian McKenzie, he uses it in his Art of Breath course. And so does actually my friend Belisa, who teaches another breath course. She uses the Gorgeous Ball also. It's really breath friendly.
It's really trunk friendly.
And there's tons of free videos that show many different ways to use it. In fact, one just went up today. I did some stuff on the Oprah Winfrey Network a few years ago, and we just shared it with Katie Bowman because I did a podcast with her. And so we've got a little video of it on Katie's website right now.
Love it. You guys out there, you guys know I'm all about breathing and rolling, but different kind of rolling. But that I do highly recommend that ball. I actually just sent one to a friend. I love your balls, Jill, because they're not aggressive and hard. You guys that listen to me, you know I'm not an aggressive therapist. I think that, you know, as it relates to time and a place for harder tools, it's usually just because that person's nervous system. That's what they want, and they buy into it more so than anything. So I try to lean towards things that are a bit friendlier, and they will accommodate to your body, and they'll work with your body, and they will expose rather than impose. And Jill's stuff does that. So I cannot recommend them highly enough. Definitely check them out. I'll link it in the show notes, so you can just click it, go right over and buy whatever you want. It's a great addition, or they are all great additions to your self-care arsenal, your self-care toolbox. That's a big thing too with me, that Jill is empowering people. Like, you know, we look at other the arguments going out there in the therapy world, and at the end of the day, my goal is for the few patients I do have is for them to not need me. I want you to be able to take care of yourself. And what Jill has created is a system that does that, and tools that you can do that, because the human body really is remarkable, and we can do so much to help it out and help it to do what it wants to do and heal and be as remarkable as it's designed to be. So it just needs a little bit of assistance. So before I leave you alone, Jill, can you talk to me about, I got two more things I want to ask.
Like cast out on the floor here, like, oh my God, I've been talking so much. I'm so tired.
Two more things. Okay. One, because we're actually talking about the Yoga Tune-Up and Role Model.
Yes.
Can you just maybe tease a little bit about how you built it? You have an empire, Jill.
Oh my gosh.
You are a female with an empire, and it's really important to me that the listeners get to hear this. And you're self-taught, and you just fucking, you've done it. And I would love if you could share anything about how you did it.
Okay.
It's a big question.
It's not easy. Yeah. It's always work. And yes, I love what I do, but today I was hoping to finish a revised syllabus for a course I'm teaching in a couple of weeks, but I just got an email from an institute that needs me to fill out a million other forms so that we can submit for continuing education credits for these other courses. So it just, so there's like, that's the kind of like, I am so grateful that this institute wants our, you know, is hosting my courses with not even me, with some of our gifted, talented trainers. But so just for, just there's, it's never ending. I have an inbox of unanswered emails that is thousands of emails long. Eventually those people will write me again. Like that's how bad it can get. So let me see, how can I inspire your audience to, I am an entrepreneur. Like it's in me. I can't stop that part of me that's an innovator that wants to be able to do my own thing. So it kind of has to be done. But I did it with my partner. My partner is my business partner is my husband, Robert. And he saw the entrepreneur in me before I knew what the word meant. And what I mean by that is I was making little yoga tune-up videos and I was teaching workshops all over the country. This is a dozen years ago when I met him. And I had a contract on the table from a really amazing video producer. And I had met with a lawyer and I was trying to get a registered trademark for Yoga Tune-Up. Like this was all what was happening when I had my first date with my husband. And he said, "You're an entrepreneur." And I said, "What does that mean?" Like I didn't even know what the word meant. So all I'm saying is it's just in me to do what I'm doing. Now I'm not a business person in the way that my husband is. My husband loves business models. He loves business models. He has had a series of different businesses over the course of his life. But when he met me, he wanted to do something that would help people and not just, you know, basically he was selling ads. It was what he was doing before he met me. But I mean, he created a really cool ad network in independent cinema, but he wanted to do something that helped people's lives directly. And, about 6 months into dating me, he came to one of my workshops, to my core workshop, and he'd done yoga before, but he wasn't a yoga person, and I didn't meet him through the yoga world. I met him outside of that, which was great. I don't date my students. So six months into dating me, I have to be clear with this, he came to one of my workshops. And if you're not familiar with yoga, and even with Yoga Tune-Up, which is what I teach, we do Shavasana. That's the corpse pose. It's the relaxation thing you do at the end of class. And you know, 2 hours and 40 minutes into the 3-hour workshop, I call out Shavasana. And he spun his head around. He looked at the clock and he thought we were only 30 minutes in the class. He didn't know how I had made 2.5 hours go by and that he wasn't like looking at the clock, wondering where things were. So he was, he had been swept up. And after the workshop, he said, "We have to bottle this." And I was like, "I don't want to." And he kept persisting that I had something to offer the world and he wanted to help build a business around it. And I was like, "That just sounds like a lot of work." And my parents were in business together and I just saw what that did. They were in the solar industry together, my mom and stepdad. They had a solar business. That's a whole other backstory, but it was our life. Our entire life was, you know, was tinting windows and, you know, hot water, wood stoves and, you know, just like solar stuff. We were in New Mexico. So when he asked me if I wanted to do it, I just kept pushing back and saying no, but they had some of my teachers, excuse me, some of my students wanted me to teach them how to teach what I taught. And finally, much longer story, I gave over and I said, "Yeah, let's do it." And I built my teacher training program. We started creating media. We formed a company and we started training teachers to teach the work. And it's been a very organic growth. It's been a very long process. The programs we build they're years in pre-production, production, and post-production. There's so much work that goes into them. Our most recent launch was the Role Model Mama, which is my prenatal, postnatal self-massage practices program. There are just so many elements that we put in. And my husband is just as detail-oriented as I am in terms of what assets he brings to production and post-production and, you know, the content that I build, the creative content that I build. So what am I saying here? There's so many details that go into having a business, building a brand, finding the right messaging, and it's always about fine-tuning. Just like I'm a process-oriented teacher, I'm a process-oriented business person, which I think in business can be really not a great strategy because everything needs to look, everything just needs to be the thing that it is. And it's got to be set and it's got to be perfect. So that's a real struggle for me because, you know, anytime we put out a product, I'm like, oh, I wish that I had said this here instead. Look, but
it's done.
Yeah, I know, right? Let it go. Let it go. So anyway, do you want to re-ask me the question or did I answer the question?
You have answered and I'm going to summarize it for you guys listening. Two things. One, time, and two, ask. Jill's been doing this for a very long time. It didn't happen overnight. There was a big process leading up to it, but it has come to fruition. Two, you know, or let me tie back into that time concept. Keep working, keep growing, keep learning, right? Keep pushing forward. And then two, ask, whether it's that you want to ask someone for help, you want to ask someone to be, you know, if you can be their student, or in this case, you know, asking for someone for help, maybe the business side. If that's not you, okay, that's fine. There's someone else that maybe they fall into your lap, maybe they don't, you have to go out and ask someone, but it's okay to collaborate there, and it's probably necessary to collaborate
essential.
There.
It's essential.
You can't do it all yourself, and that's okay. All right, so Jill's given us an amazing backstory, and she's created an amazing product, and the recipe is the same as we see a lot of other people. It takes time. This stuff doesn't happen overnight. It takes a shit ton of hard work, and it takes a team. So remember that, guys.
Yeah, and we have a team of employees, and we also have a teaching team of over 500 teachers worldwide that are amazing ambassadors of our competencies, of the competencies that we offer through the programming.
500, Jill. You're like the Beyonce of fashion.
No, I'm not the Beyonce of fashion.
Like, what? That's insane, Jill. That's amazing. You created an empire, man. You've made stuff digestible. You've made it tangible. You've made it understandable. You've made it fun and interesting, and you've brought it to people. I think one of the biggest things I see in the therapeutic world, in the PT world, is that PTs spend a lot of time arguing with other PTs or market. They're putting stuff out that's really just going to other PTs. It's not going to the consumer in any capacity. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're like, well, why is this not changing? Because people don't even know that you exist.
Yeah.
Whereas Jill's over here educating the educators, but also has found a way to reach the consumer.
Absolutely.
You are the Beyonce of fascia.
If I can get my mother, I'm still I was trying to get my mom to come to, you know, the thing I'm doing with Katie Bowman is dynamic aging with or without joint replacements up at a retreat center in Santa Cruz. And by the way, it's already halfway sold out. So if you're interested, you better get on that.
Get on it.
It's going to be awesome. But you know, I'm trying to get my mom to come to something. And it's like, I was like, Mom, I have the perfect retreat center. It's in the Redwoods. So to me, really, all of this is about, I'm just trying to reach my mom. You understand? And so I just keep reworking my message so that someday it will be seductive enough that she's like, that's it. I'm really close on this one. I'm telling you, I'm about to seal the deal on her getting up to the Redwoods. But she lives in New Orleans.
You get mom in.
Yeah. She, like, you know. Yeah, exactly.
Reach the people, man.
But really, much of it is for me, like a major operating principle for me is my mother has been, both my parents in different ways, huge influences in my life. But my mother suffered from chronic asthma since she was 13 years old. And so I grew up around a woman she was on so many different prescription medicines and really helpless in the face of an asthma attack. And I think that's one of my most dear work to me is the breath work that I teach and the self mobilization of the trunk and the respiratory interfaces is because
life force,
I want to help my mom. And so I'm fine with that being this underlying need to say, you know, like to save my mom in the same way that she was trying to save me from whatever the rigors of the world.
Jill. Oh God, I got one last thing and I'm going to let you go. One last thing.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you tell us whatever you want about the interstitium? You know I was going to ask this, Jill. I couldn't let you leave
it out. I was thinking about it while I was, you know, like driving in my car on the way back to my computer to talk to you. I was like, oh shit. just gonna ask me about the interstitium, and I haven't reread any of the research, but what can I offer her that she doesn't already know?
The listeners too, they may have no idea.
Okay.
Anything.
Oh, how do I do this in less than 3 minutes? So the interstitium was sort of unleashed during a slow medical news week in April of 2018. I believe the week before Stephen Hawking had died. So the health news, peg was hot from his, from the loss of him. And so, naturally many eyes were waiting for the next health piece. Neil Thies is the author of the paper that came out that was suggesting that this interstitium might be a new organ. Now, what is the interstitium according to Neil Thies? So one of the zones of fluid within the fascial layer, like if we look at fascia as a lasagna, as many different layers that are, sort of sewn together. The most superficial layer of fascia is called superficial fascia. And it's the springy, fatty layer. And you can find it right underneath your skin, wherever you're touching on your body. If you're pinching, your chub, you're pinching your superficial fascia. Now, if you hold on to, I'm pinching my forearm. It's a really easy thing. Or you can pinch your abdomen. It's really easy. In fact, if you're feeling the fat on your forearm versus the fat on your abdomen, you'll notice that the actual layer of fat has a different texture.
It's different.
Yeah, because the fat cells have different girth depending on where they're on your body. Like the fat on your heel is very, very small fat cells, but the fascia there that interconnects those fat cells is very robust. It's also robust on your abdomen, but they're just bigger fat cells. Mm-hmm. Okay, so when you are able to kind of squinch that inch that, what was that cereal that used to make you pinch an inch? 12K? What is it? Circle K?
Special K. Special K. Special K. We got it.
12K. Let's call it 12K. That's going to be my cereal. It's going to be $12,000. So when you pinch it, you can move it to the right, to the left. You can move it up, down. You can even twist it, right? So that fatty layer has the ability to slide. And what it's sliding around on or within is the deepest layer of your superficial fascia, which is lying on top of your deep fascia. The deep fascia isn't springy like your fatty layer. Your deep fascia looks like duct tape. But you have this zone of transition between the deep and the superficial, this sliding zone. And Neil was describing this sliding zone and naming it the interstitium. Now, Gil Headley calls this perifascial membrane. I'm going to blank on some of my fascia people right now. I'm very embarrassed. But other people call this a fascial interface. Or it's in the role model book, I call this loose fascia. So it's really this zone where you have no fat cells, but you have a sliding zone in and amongst the fatty layer and then the deep layer. Now, you also have this sliding zone inside of muscles. You have interstitium within sliding zones within muscles, but you also have it in organs. So his original study, I believe he was in a gallbladder duct, and he saw this fluid zone, this membranous zone. And on one side of this zone, he saw cells, dormant cells, just hanging out. And the other side, there weren't any. And he was able to see this with a new type of confocal laser camera. It's like little tiny camera that didn't change the behavior, apparently, that didn't change the behavior of the cells. And so this was a new finding that they found these cells on one side of the zone versus the other. And the theory is that these cells might be tumor cells, or dormant tumor cells. These are the cells that would produce a tumor in order to cut off blood supply from different invaders right? So how's that for interstitium?
Dude.
Okay. The other thing about, I should say, is that when he came out with this, the titans of fascia research were like, We've been talking about this area for decades. What is going on here? We've been talking about this. Why are you calling this the interstitium? This is the deep fat. This is the sliding zone. This is the loose fascia. This is the interface. This is the perifascial membrane. And so they did the, there's a organization called the Fascia Research Congress, which if you're not a member of, you can, it's not that expensive. And you can be privy to lots of really cool seminars all over the world where, or even a webinar, which is what they did. Carlos Stecco and Robert Schleip hosted a webinar with Dr. Thies, and Dr. Thies had a chance to talk to the members of the Fascia Research Society, Fascia Research Society, and explain why he didn't know about them.
Oh, okay.
So Dr. Neil Thies is a, oh God, he is a, I can't remember the type of doctor he is, but he's in New York City and he, pathologist. He's a pathologist.
Okay.
So he's, you know, looking at lots of biopsies and stuff like that. And okay, how do I keep this in under 3 minutes? Are your listeners
keep going? They're definitely listening. People have turned up the volume at this point.
What he said was, your search terms and my search terms were different. So when I was looking for other studies that had been done on this area, the terms I was using were not the same terms you all were tagging in your studies. So they didn't pop up. Your names didn't pop up. Which is like crazy that, but that's just basically what happened. And that's the problem with in fascia research is that because it's so new and it's so Wild West, that not all of the terms are agreed upon or are accepted as the term.
Yes.
And so that's where this gets exciting, because now there is this massive, you know, psychic collagen bridge being built for an interdisciplinary relationship between these other titans of fascia research that haven't been doing these like medical biopsy things, yes, that have to deal with like cancer or, you know, a diseased pancreatic duct, and what Dr. Thies and his pathology peeps are doing. And we're going to get to see that firsthand, because I believe you and I,
yes,
are going to be sitting there in Berlin in a couple of months and taking it all
like
in.
In a month, dude. It's like next month.
Oh my God.
It's next month. And this episode may go out after. I'm trying to think. It's going to go out, I think, right before it. So,
oh, good.
Fascia Research Congress is beginning of November
14th or 15th.
Yeah. And Jill was awesome enough to actually help me get into that. There was spots were closed, and then she reached out, and now there's spots open, and I'm going.
Oh, yeah, I did. I just kind of elbow you in there.
This is like, Jill, I told you, because you are the Beyonce of fascia. I was not joking with that moniker. Like, I asked Jill, then suddenly there's spaces. So,
you know what? You gotta, these people are so amazing. You're going to have such a good time.
I'm pumped to try and do what you've been saying all along, Jill, and just keep learning more and expose yourself to it and look directly into it and you know, go and see more of this. Jill had, you know, referenced earlier, I saw her at I went to Gil's, he had like a 4-hour course that he did that was, honestly, whenever I teach, I recommend it to everyone. If you have a chance to learn from this man. Oh, is it?
Yep, you can get it online now. He's got it on his website. So put that in the show notes.
That's going in the show notes for sure. And for you guys, one of the coolest things about that was, honestly, there's always something to be said about being in the room, which is why I want to go to this Fascia Research Congress. There's something different. And the room, when we went and did that, it was filled with yoga practitioners, what it seemed like. It didn't seem like there was actually as many. It seemed like I was in the minority as a PT. It was like in a yoga studio, very different than any other course I've ever gone to. Packed. It was absolutely packed. And people just there to learn and being so grateful and appreciative, and it just puts you in a different mindset of like just receiving this information and not trying to be like but just listening to what this person had to say and what his experience has been in researching this and devoting his life to this. Mm-hmm. It was truly, you know, guys, listen, definitely go check it out online. If you find it's coming near you, or he has another course that he's doing, another tour, go, because there's something so magical about being in the room at these kind of things, whether it's the people you meet, just the energy in the room. Absolutely go. And those names that she threw up before, Stecco and Schleip, I will put those in the show notes. All good names to know if you're wanting to learn more about fascia, so you guys can go and do some of your own research and try and become even a fraction of as smart as this woman is. So, Jill, this was all the stuff I wanted. It's so good.
I hope I was accurate about the interstitium, but you know what?
Dude.
It doesn't matter because we're going to like, we're going to do a lot of scrubbing and learn so much more. Because he already knows more than he did, you know, whatever, 7 months ago when that thing got published. So amazing. We're going to have all this the new information, right? We'll share.
Dude, I am so pumped. You guys listening to this, Jill and I are going to be doing some sort of something after the conference. We're going to have something. We're going to be, whether it's Instagram Live, whether it's podcast, I don't really know, but we're going to be collaborating yet again to give you what we learned there.
We're going to do the Fascia Digest. That's what we're going to do, the Fascia
Digest. I like that. Yeah. I like that. So stay tuned for that. Jill, if the folks, we've dropped it a few times throughout the episode, but if the folks want to follow you, contact you, find your stuff, how can they do that?
Go to the website, tuneupfitness.com. You're curious about taking classes with myself or any of our teachers. There's a teacher index there. You type in your zip code and hopefully there's a teacher in your area. And we have teachers from Japan, Croatia, all over the UK, Canada, all over the States, Mexico, even in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, I believe. So that's a great place to find a teacher for live lessons or workshops. We're really big on workshop learning. And then if you want to follow us on Instagram, you can follow my brand page, Tune Up Fitness, and me personally at Yoga Tune Up. And then, of course, we're on Facebook under the same on Facebook, it's Tune Up Fitness and then Jill Miller. I have an author page on Facebook. But Instagram is kind of where it's happening these days. I like to do a lot of stories. Like you said, I like to post developmental stuff of my kids. And then, you know, the Halloween stuff is happening at the house now. So,
dude, it's so good. She just did one, I don't know, maybe a little while ago, of, you know, showing Asher pushing a baby cart, a stroller. What is it called? A shopping cart. I don't know where you got a shopping cart that small. First of all. So tiny, and she was tying it into you know, a virtual trunk rotation. And I was just like, this is brilliant. Like, you guys can learn so much and also get to watch this really cute kid. So Yoga Tune Up, I will link everything else in the show notes. Lots of information today, so maybe go back, rewind this, and watch this or listen to this episode one more time.
And then let me just say, we also have amazing trainings. So we have 8 different courses. Some of them are competency courses, others are just immersions, and I can't recommend the trainings and the trainers enough. It's great content, it's great group experience. I love group learning, just like you were talking about. You learn so much more when you're in a room with other humans and getting to regulate with them rather than you regulating with your computer. So check it out. Yes. There's courses all over the world.
You guys have just so much at your fingertips now. Please go and do something. Jill, thank you for your time. I know you're so busy and I was really, really looking forward to this. So thank you. This was incredible. Like, just covering so many topics and sharing so much of yourself like you always do. So endlessly, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Jill.
Woo-hoo. Thanks, Shante.
We made it. We made it. You guys out there, thank you. You could have been doing anything and you chose to listen to us, and Jill dropped, man, a ton of bombs. So I hope you enjoyed it. If you like the episode, why don't you give it a little stars on there on if you're listening to an iTunes, whatever you're listening to. If you loved it, subscribe. It does help people find the podcast. And then when you're done with that, go check out some of those resources that Jill sent you. I can't get enough of that. All right, my friends, thank you again for listening. Until next time, Jill Miller and Maestro